are back with episode 504 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and now I'm really wondering, why didn't we make 500 a musical episode?
Because there are simply too many man tears that would have been invoked by that, Edmund. That's why.
True. True, yes, okay, yes, we would have been awash in them.
Yes, too many BM moments for our own good.
Yes.
But we can hope and pray that this episode will induce copious renditions of Carry On, My Wayward Son, as we are going to be obviously catching up on a show that has also had quite a storied anniversary of late.
Yes.
But before we do any of that, Edmund, why don't we go ahead and do the particulars, because we kind of need to remind everybody of how this goes.
Absolutely.
We usually have our spoiler warning followed by the genre news that we continue to cover throughout the week. We then have our break, which is not quite mid-show, but it's our little musical interlude, and then we go into episodic discussion. I bet everyone can kind of guess what we're going to focus on a lot in this episode, but just in case they're going to be a little surprised, we should probably give them some kind of warning.
Absolutely. Our policy here is to discuss absolutely anything that may have happened in the episode or in the news. So there is a good chance you'll be spoiled if you haven't seen it yet. But we've given you, in case of one show, weeks and weeks to get caught up.
That's right. And we are going to, as mentioned, start with a little bit of genre news. And boy, do I have an interesting one here. Edmund, fill us in on this oddly timed piece of information.
Yes. There is a new movie from George Lucas. Strange Magic is a madcap fairy tale musical inspired by A Midsummer Night's Dream. So apparently he's taking a page from Joss Whedon's playbook. It's animated. It says CGI from Industrial Light and Magic. Kristen Chenoweth and Alan Cumming are some of the voice actors, along with, more people than I can list, but a very large and impressive cast. And the story was from Lucas. However, he did not write the screenplay, so this is probably a good thing. The screenwriters from such things as Elf and Brave and the Lion King have worked on it. This is a bit of a surprise in the midst of all the George is directly involved with the new Star Wars movies, but something we perhaps weren't quite expecting from him coming out.
No, and it coming so soon after the announcement is what surprised me. It's, you would think there would be a little more fanfare, but maybe he's trying to be at least a bit removed from anything new Star Wars related coming out.
So
as not to have a direct comparison. I can't imagine why.
Yes. And also I just realized I did leave out the thing that it is actually being released on January 23rd next year, so in just 2 months. So yeah, that was the other strange part about all this. It kind of came out of nowhere, and now it's what I find odd about that scheduling is that of course that is traditionally sort of the dump a movie that's not that good time to release something. So hopefully it's just their counter programming, not that they can't quite figure out what to do with it.
You're right, and what's even stranger is that kind of dumping ground period has gotten so small, because there are even tentpole films that are coming out in March now,
right?
Like The Winter Soldier did, and you figure that the summer is going right into early spring. If not late winter, you don't have a whole lot of time in the schedule anymore to just put movies out where, yeah, they're crappy, but they're not going to have much competition. So it is an odd time. It's like literally in the one time during the year when no one's looking for anything big and good to be out in theaters.
Exactly.
Good, Good for you, Lucas, I guess. So, you know, I would say that over the last several years of its life, the CW network has done a lot of good work to recover some of its reputation. It's certainly become a bit of a darling for anyone who's into various genres of speculative fiction, and it's kind of still retained some of that stuff about being a little less than serious and teenagery, but it's gotten some gravitas. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to see that they managed to undermine that on occasion by going back to some questionable decisions. I shouldn't really say that, because there are some franchises that have managed to make almost legendary choices for holiday-themed episodes. I mean, Buffy yes. and Angel did it well. Certainly Buffy did. I don't know how it's going to work for some of these other shows, though. Yes. The CW is going to have a slate of holiday programming, and here is a bit of a rundown since we've got the time to do it. Funny, the CW, I think, is going to feature heavily into our discussions.
Yes.
Anyway, so on Thursday, November 20th, we have The Vampire Diaries and their Thanksgiving episode. Well... there are a lot of characters with appetites, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Not necessarily for the traditional fare.
No, I guess not. A week later, Dave, you've got on the 26th, the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Okay. That makes sense. It's mm-hmm. a Thanksgiving-themed movie, right?
Absolutely, so, yes.
On the 28th, Friday, we've got Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. That gem classic. Yes. Okay. Followed by The Kung Fu Panda Holiday and Merry Madagascar. Okay, DreamWorks. Of course, you can't just run some of these once. On the 1st of December, they once again run Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, because once is not enough. And then they have the Greatest Holiday Commercials Countdown.
Okay.
Yeah. It gets better. On the 8th of December, they have the Originals. They are apparently doing what I'm guessing is a Christmas-themed episode. Because when I think Viking first original family of vampires, I think Christmas. Then on the 9th, the very next night, you've got The Flash and Barry Allen celebrating Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The night after that, we have Arrow with their Christmas-themed episode. And on the very next night, we have The Vampire Diaries with their Christmas episode. So we have an entire week of Christmas-themed episodes from the major shows. I'm thankfully not seeing Supernatural in here. That's all I can say.
Yeah, yes.
Certainly this season, I can't imagine how a holiday-themed episode would work. I haven't even gotten to the more inexplicable stuff here. You know, they repeat the holiday commercials thing. They've got like a jingle ball thing going on here. Now, here's what I can't believe. They managed to pull this out of the vault. Twice over these holidays, they are rerunning
yes.
Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol.
Absolutely.
I don't think I've seen this since I was like 10.
That sounds about right. I mean, they do mention it was originally produced in 62, but of course was in heavy holiday rotation for a good 10 years or so.
And then it dropped completely off the map.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, this was that thing that, like, you know, when Channel 11 in New York had nothing better for a couple hours, they'd run that.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it's still ingrained in my memory, and I can't believe that it's actually going to be on primetime television.
Yes.
that's boggling my mind. Not just once, but twice. It's going to run on Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've got on Christmas itself, the 2-hour movie, that everyone was looking for, The 12 Dogs of Christmas. This just, in this touching holiday tale set during the Great Depression.
Of course.
Irrepressible Emma uses dogs to teach people the true meaning of Christmas. What? Okay. But at any rate, right, we've got, obviously then they have a musical festival around New Year's. But wow, odd. Especially that 1 week of nothing but Christmas-themed episodes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. CW, you managed to surprise me. But, you know, I am giving them a little bit of flack, but they did give us a bit of an early present this week.
Mm-hmm.
At least in my mind, they released the first photos of Katie Cassidy, Laurel, as Black Canary. Effectively confirming what we all knew was going to happen.
Well, yes.
It's hard to really get a sense of her in these stills. I mean, I feel like it was the same way when there were stills of Sarah as Black Canary. It'll be a lot better when we can see her in action.
Absolutely.
But you can definitely tell how the outfits have been. Well, they are one kind of takes from the other.
Mm-hmm.
A little darker, though, obviously, since she's on a mission of vengeance. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I do wonder about the decision to honor her sister with a blonde wig.
Yeah. I mean, it's it is a little strange, but you know, I guess maybe she sees that Oliver's little green mask is still not remotely enough to actually hide his
yes.
face. Anyway. It does mention here is that Ted Grant, who of course we ripped into quite a bit in the previous episode of ours, is actually supposedly a DC character called Wildcat. I'm sure Gary would have been able to tell us about that and then also express his disappointment in the portrayal of said character, but there we are.
Yes.
But I'm actually happy to see this. I know there are some people that are like, ugh, why do they have to have her turn? Come on. It was expected she was going to be Black Canary.
Yes. We all knew it was going to happen. So.
Yes, and I'm happy to see it happen. I think that Laurel as a character had to start in a place where everybody was kind of dubious about her, and now not so much.
Mm-hmm.
But there we are. All right, that is our news for this particular episode. We are then going to go into our break here, and then we are going to jump into some episodic discussion, so stay tuned.
Be my God just for tonight. That is all I'm asking for. Take me under your wing. I can't make it anymore. Oh, I'm so full of fear. May you read asking for. That is all I need to know. That is all I'm asking for. Be my guard just until dawn, when I can hear the birds again. I'm as helpless as can be. Will you guard my little flame? If we never meet again, you shall always keep in mind that you were my God tonight. That you were.
Edmund, can't imagine what it is that you'd like to get into first.
I think I will choose the older and more lived-in trench coat. And let's talk about Supernatural.
Yes, imagine that. Okay, we are going to go ahead then. We've got four episodes. Four to get into.
Yes.
And we are going to go ahead and run the first promo right now.
What do you think you're doing?
Dean is not Dean right now.
Watch this.
Dean's a demon.
Whatever happens, we will fix it.
I'm doing all I can not to rip out your throat.
You could have killed that guy and you didn't. You took mercy on him.
What I'm gonna do to you, Sammy? Well, that ain't gonna be mercy.
Supernatural, all new episode Tuesday, 9, 8 central on the CW.
Okay, and if you could do the first recap, please.
Certainly. Supernatural Season 10, Episode 2, Reichenbach. Dean becomes more aggressive as a demon, and Crowley tells him it's because the Mark of Cain needs to be fed. Meanwhile, Sam is captured by an angry man who blames Dean for his father's death and wants revenge, and Hannah asks Metatron for help when Castiel's grace continues to fade.
Indeed. Boy, it's going to take just a few moments for me to wrap my head around this one again, but I did manage to pull up my review back on VogNetwork.com. And in the meantime, Edmund, what would you give this one?
I will give this one an 8.
Okay. And I gave it a 9. I was very happy with this one. I thought that it did a little bit more of what you guys, I think, were looking for out of the premiere.
Mm-hmm.
As I recall, both you and Bronstum felt like the premiere didn't really go far enough.
Right.
And this was kind of all that stuff and more. I love Demon Dean. He's hilarious. And in this, I kind of missed this when we talked about it the first time, because I feel like it was this little in-joke that only a few people are going to recall. But when I met Mark Shepard a little over a year ago,
mm-hmm.
there was this little thing that Bronstum, based on his own experience meeting Mark Shepard at a con and having been part of the staff of a con, wanted me to mention to him something about being in a karaoke bar. Or being at karaoke. And Mark Shepard just got this completely offended look on his face at the very thought that he would be stuck, found dead in a, you know, karaoke bar. And sure enough, the season premiere of Supernatural, he's in a karaoke situation.
In a karaoke situation, but having to endure Demon Dean doing karaoke, so perhaps that explains his distaste.
It could, but since all of that was before any of this was put together, it's either incredibly ironic or somebody was listening.
Yes.
Since there were a couple other people from the show, I think they maybe went to Mr. Carver and said, "Hey, you know, it would be really funny."
Yes. You know who really hates karaoke?
Exactly. Maybe his look of pain was not acting so much as just, you know, truth in performance. But anyhow, Demon Dean, of course, being a lot of fun. And what I've liked about this is that they fleshed out his nature a lot more. There is a seed inside of him of, you know, a Knight of Hell type of level demon,
mm-hmm.
thanks to the influence of the Mark of Cain in the First Blade. But the Mark of Cain and the First Blade act as a bit of a control over that. So as long as he continues to feed the mark, he can retain his own true personality to some degree. And so there's this really nice tension that comes here where Crowley comes along with this whole offer of, hey, I'll give you people that deserve to die.
Mm-hmm.
You kill them and you won't become the massive demon and become the very thing that you always feared that you would become. And yeah, it set this really great dynamic up. Which kind of left me a little bit, I would have liked to have seen that play out a little longer. I completely understand why they didn't, but I like the fact that they even put it out there at all, because it really plays this whole idea of, you know, what is temptation for Dean? And the fact that Dean, this is the thing that Dean never in a million years would have wanted to have happen, and yet he's choosing these things. There's a part of him that does want to be this demon, and that's, I like where that's going.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as far as the Dean stuff, I don't think there is much I could add. Other than just agreeing that there is part of me that wanted them to play it out a little bit longer, but I also understood them not wanting to draw it out too long and get back to our usual brother on brother action. And then I guess the other big aspect is the whole thing of the guy capturing Sam and going on his quest for revenge against Dean. What did you think about that whole element?
It was okay. I felt like that was clearly, when you compare it to what was going on with Dean and Crowley and all of that, it just wasn't quite on the same level.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it wasn't so distressing that it wasn't maintaining the quality of the episode, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of makes sense that there would be people that would accumulate over time just like this, you know? I'm surprised that they don't run into people like this more often, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Part of my what I was wondering was, in terms of those flashbacks, was that a flashback to anything that was seminal in the run of the show, or were they just coming up with another case of a flashback, but just to something we actually didn't know anything about before?
No, this doesn't ring a bell.
Okay.
And as far as I recall, looking back on it, there wasn't anything. Yeah, I don't make any note of that.
Okay.
It was, in fact, it was kind of such a small piece of what I really got out of the episode that I didn't really talk about it at all. I really focus more on Dean and Castiel.
Yeah, yeah.
Castiel in particular, I kind of like where they're going with that. I wish they would leave Metatron alone. At the same time, I understand that they kind of have to go here.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to introduce the idea that Castiel's grace is still out there somewhere, then Metatron's probably the only one that's going to be able to point in the right direction.
You would think.
It's just a matter of how that works. Although I do like this whole thing with Hannah. She is kind of a nice recurring to play off of Castiel and continue to show the difference between a run-of-the-mill angel, I guess you could say, and where Castiel has gone so far. I mean, he keeps talking about the fact that he's fallen and that he's not anything like a normal angel, but it's good to see that explored a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'm of the theory that, in a sense, what you've got here is this parallel that's been established where you've got Crowley on the one side and Castiel on the other that have both been so distinctly influenced by the Winchesters,
mm-hmm.
that have had a good chunk of humanity inserted into them, yes. No pun intended,
yeah.
by the Winchesters, that in essence, it continues to make this argument that the Winchesters and their story is just completely changing the way that the order of the, that the celestial order is working. Because you could see, like, Crowley be maintaining control of hell, mm-hmm. Castiel essentially controlling the direction that heaven goes.
Yep.
And it's all based on these two brothers. So it makes sense from a larger mythological point of view, and I like the fact that it's still going in that direction. I think it's one of the things that Carver has actually successfully done. For all the missteps here and there, he's kept that picture very much in mind.
Yeah, definitely. And, we will have to see we're making our own assumptions about this sort of three season arc that Carver was talking about being possibly the good place to end. But I'm with you in terms of being very intrigued by this whole idea of heaven and hell being in the hands of these characters that could maybe affect some sort of odd reconciliation, or who knows. So and of course, I mean, this whole thing where the show that nobody believed would make it to the five seasons is now in this position where we're not even sure if it's going if it's going to stop or just keep on going and keep on going.
Well, talking about keep on going, we've yes. got another episode here that we can talk about, and I think this will be slightly more contentious. Anyone who understands this episode would understand why. But let's go ahead and run the promo first.
Sammy! You can blame yourself for me getting loose.
This Tuesday.
This road we're on, it's dangerous. It's hell.
Deadly conflicts heat up.
I don't want to leave till I find you.
As brotherly love.
Guilty of treason.
Go up in smoke.
Let's finish this game!
I did not see that coming.
Supernatural, only this Tuesday at 9, 8 central on the CW.
Okay, and that would be Supernatural Season 10, Episode 3, Soul Survivor. Sam tries to release Dean from the Mark of Cain. Meanwhile, Crowley seeks the help of an unlikely ally after encountering problems due to Dean's behavior. Kinda. Sorta.
Something like that.
That episode sounds a lot better. I gave this one a 6. What would you give this one?
yeah, I think I will agree with the 6.
What a complete disaster. Okay. I'm sure people are wondering, well, come on, the first two episodes you thought were great. Why is this one so bad? Well, first of all, as soon as this episode started, I did not even need to see the opening credits to know exactly what Jokers wrote this episode.
Yes.
Buckner, Russ, Lemming, will you please go away? I don't often call out writers for being absolutely terrible, but these guys just do not seem to get this show. And I feel really bad for Jensen Ackles because he directed this episode, mm-hmm. and it was a steaming pile. First of all, I don't know if they maybe just figured that, hey, we're going to have to bring Dean back to himself sooner rather than later. It's going to be very unpopular. Let's make the writers that screw everything up anyway just take this episode. So it's like, you know, limiting the damage, right?
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
I don't know. After all of this time that they spent on demonic Dean, why would they just take him off the plate so quickly? Take him off the table. You've just developed him for two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Why reverse it so quickly?
Yeah.
It makes, I know that's not their fault, but if you, it's a huge challenge. You got to rise to it. The way that they explain everything doesn't add up.
My sense of it was that there is almost like they have some little unwritten rule in their head of we can't run anything past two episodes, and it just seemed completely arbitrary, and even given just what I've seen in the second half of the show, it was certainly an arc that looked like it was being set up to run for at least a few more episodes than this.
Yes, and that was annoying enough. The other thing is that this is the second time that I can really put my finger on how these particular writers just can't seem to... I always say that their dialogue feels off. The characterization feels off.
Mm-hmm.
And last time I remember, there was that one episode where all the other prophets got abducted, and they were hanging out in Crowley's little hideaway.
Right.
And he was kind of torturing them and it just felt like Crowley's dialogue just didn't make sense. It didn't add up to where the character usually is. It just felt off. The same thing in this episode. Crowley just did not seem like the same character from the first two episodes of the season. And I get it. There's this like balance at this point. He's the conniving master king of hell.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also Dean's ex-BFF.
Right.
I get it.
Yes.
But then you've got to really be able to hone in on that balance and keep it consistent. And they didn't. It just felt off. Am I making sense? Because mm-hmm. I think Crowley of all the characters is the one that if you get it wrong, it's going to be obvious.
Yeah, I mean you're right. It was in terms of that balance, and there's still that wild card of the human blood roaming around there as well, and how much residual effect that's having. I think you're right. I mean, it is that was kind of the most glaring aspect to this that seemed to shift after the first two, and after they'd done, I thought about a very good job of establishing that relationship between him and Dean, and how Crowley had managed to shift things and to take advantage of the possession, and this is just that didn't jive with his reactions here.
Yeah, and I think I summed it up in my review that, you know, basically this whole episode was just to bring them back to the status quo.
Yeah.
And reset button episodes do nothing but piss off people like us
yes.
who like the longer narrative.
Yeah.
So you've got Dean kind of back,
mm-hmm.
but he's still got the mark of Cain, so that's,
of course.
You know,
yes.
it's going to rear its ugly head again, of course.
Yes.
Sam's sort of back, but just as likely to make really bad choices in life. And Castiel is sort of back because he's got another little dose of the grapes, but
yeah, it's a little booster shot, but
Yeah, but that, so it's like, hey, let's throw in all this stuff. We'll bring it back to the status quo, but it's, you know, all a delaying tactic until we really address it later.
Yes.
And that was kind of what I said was like, oh, so basically this is the same problem that the ninth season had, which was, do you have enough story for the whole season? Have you really thought it through?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause Carver, yeah, he's got great ideas, but on paper, at least, the execution has been really spotty. And this is another example of that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I've gone on and on kind of ripping into this one. Is there anything you wanted to
add to the... Not really. Yeah, I think it's, just to chalk it up, as you said, to resetting everything. And of course, now that they've done that, perhaps we should see where they decided to go after that reset.
Yes, indeed. Let's go ahead then and run the next promo.
Next Tuesday,
folks torn clean through.
The Winchesters want to know.
There was another kill.
What's eating you?
You boys must come up on stuff like this all the time.
Oh, yeah, constantly.
Supernatural, all new, next Tuesday at 9, 8 Central on the CW.
All right, and if you don't mind doing the recap.
Certainly. Supernatural Season 10, Episode 4, Paper Moon. A series of werewolf attacks points to Kate, the werewolf Sam and Dean let live.
That was awfully descriptive.
Yes.
What would you give this one?
I will give this a 7.
That's exactly where I landed.
Yes.
Dead average.
A step up, but the bare minimum.
Yeah, so, I mean, this one, perhaps people shouldn't be too surprised then why I did not bother writing up a review for the website. Other than the fact that the timing just didn't work out, I didn't have a lot to say about it. What were your takeaways on this one?
Well, I mean, it did just seem odd that after hitting that reset button, that we come back with essentially just a pretty standard Monster of the Week episode. You know, yes, it is a returning monster, but with of course family and complications. It just seemed like an odd transition going from the setups of the first two episodes to everything getting back to normal in 3, and then we're in the fourth episode and things are really back to normal. To the point where, you know, this just felt like a completely generic episode that could have occurred just about anywhere in the series.
This reminds me a lot of that Arrow episode we were talking about last episode of our show.
Yes.
Because it was basically this really blatant parallel that they were trying to
mm-hmm.
establish, and it didn't quite come together. But to your point, all they did was really name check what had happened before. They didn't really address it head on.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, okay, well, where are you going with this? It was a very odd episode to go into a 2-week break.
Mm-hmm.
It was odd to the point where I even forgot that it existed. It was that just there. But the thing is that, you know, you would think then, why is it a 7 versus something lower? It's not that it was poor quality. It just was there. It was entertaining for that 1 hour. That was about all that I got out of it.
Yeah, it was entertaining. You know, and it was more the whole thing of the there wasn't much happening to advance whatever more, you know, the overall arcs. It was definitely one of those standalone episodes. Yeah, I mean, it. was just the oddest thing to have, this episode where we were just back, essentially back to normal, and just a very odd follow up to, you know, yes, we're resetting everything. So, but I think I'm repeating myself at this point. So that's probably about all I need to say about this.
Yeah, I think maybe, the impression that I get is that maybe the writers are getting a little tired. maybe what they need to do is turn to the fans.
Yes.
Turn to the fandom and say, guys, what kind of stories would you create?
Would you like to hear?
Yeah, what kind of fan fiction do you think you would explore? I wonder. Perhaps a promo would be appropriate at this time.
I think so.
Tuesday, November 11th.
You're all here because you love Supernatural.
A 200th episode special event.
We got work to do.
Is going to do something really scary. Sing.
There is no singing in Supernatural.
Well, this is Marie's interpretation.
You are idiots.
Cut!
On the road so far. Now the road so far.
I gotta say, man, pretty charming.
I'm gonna throw up.
Supernatural, all new, 200th episode special event, Tuesday, November 11th at 9, 8 central on the CW.
Okay, Supernatural Season 10, Episode 5, Fan Fiction. Sam and Dean investigate the disappearance of a teacher and are stunned to learn that the victim's school is putting on a musical based on their lives. The 200th episode of Supernatural.
Supernatural.
Oh, boy. What would you give this one? It may be a very unfair question to ask.
Yeah,
but...
I will give it a 9.5.
That's what I gave it too. Look at this. We're in lockstep almost entirely the whole way.
Yeah. Well, no. And honestly, the pause was more about, you know, okay, was this just one of those episodes that transcended, as we talk about, and gets the 10? And but then it was there's something about it where as much as I enjoyed the heck out of it, you know, no, I'm still taking that little notch off, but I'm not exactly certain why.
Yeah. There's a few little eensy-weensy things that are buried in there somewhere that just kept it from being as perfect a gem as something like The French Mistake.
Right.
What I feel like it might be is that I put as the because I had to put something as, you know, the good, the bad in my review, and the bad I put in there is that there's a very, very slight reminder that the show is a bit past its prime. Yes. And it's not like this is the capstone of a storied run, but almost everything that was in the musical itself was from the first 5 seasons.
Right.
And so it's hearkening back to the original Kripke era, and it's a very loving mockery or knowing wink towards that. It's certainly a loving wink towards the fans that came into the show during that period and perhaps over-romanticized that period to a certain extent. And I mean that in every sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's like, you know, they even at one point have Dean explain what's happened since the end of the 5th season. And the girl just goes, "That's the worst fan fiction I've ever heard."
I know. Yeah, I know. I love that moment. I mean, that was definitely one of the highlights.
It's like, and you're not wrong. It has never been quite the show that it was back then.
Yeah.
And that's kind of an odd thing to highlight and acknowledge, but it's not a huge negative, but it's like that thing where it's like you kind of come out of it going, yeah, that was great. It was a good reminder of all the things that we loved back 5 years ago. odd. A little bit strange. But wow. I was a little concerned that it would be a little esoteric for the non like longtime fans, like the ones mm-hmm. who came in after that run, because there's so much that is season 4 and 5. Some things that are notable that they brought up, which goes back to my theory that Carver considers his tenure on the show to be either kind of being an homage to the Kripke era or wrapping up any loose threads from the Kripke era.
Right.
Or both. But wow, what a way to pull off a 200th episode celebration of a show while also managing to be completely in lockstep with where the core characters should be right now and where they need to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was going to mention, I mean, as one of those viewers who did, of course, just pick it up after the 5th season, although, of course, with you and Bronze Thumb, you know, not spoiling things from the early seasons, but sort of giving me enough background to where I could certainly appreciate what was happening in the musical. But I think what really made it work was the way the characters were drawn and Sam and especially Dean's reactions to it. I actually know from checking the Twitter feed after the episode that. And Andrew Floyd Webber was actually a flub by Jansen. He was supposed to say Andrew Lloyd Webber, but messing it up, of course, made it even more perfect. So
was, I'm surprised there's not a Twitter handle Andrew Floyd Webber out there right now.
Yes,
but anyway,
but it was you know I think it was extremely well done. Because even if you didn't know the specifics, I mean, you could tell how much of a homage to the fans, and you know, managing to work it in this way through an amateur theatrical, where you know all of those elements would automatically come into play in a surprisingly natural manner for what was you know was essentially a you know a over the top celebration.
Yeah. Now there were a couple things that I think were really brought into what's the word that I want to use here? Focus.
Mm-hmm.
Or name checked things that were brought back into this that are kind of important.
Mm-hmm.
At least I think they are going to be. Adam.
Yes.
The lost third Winchester brother. Who I don't know if you even remembered us talking about that.
I did vaguely, just enough to understand what they were referring to. So.
Yes, the fact that you know there's been some speculation: are they going to go back to that at any time? I did like the fact that Sam and Dean were like Sam was like, "Who's that again?" Oh, that's the other brother, and they're both like, "Oh." Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, him. Oops. Yes.
Yes. But the fact that they even brought it up was, to me, foreshadowing potentially.
Absolutely.
And then there was that wonderful little thing at the very end, which I think I probably need to explain at least a little bit. But
yeah.
The whole premise of the meta narrative is that this guy, Chuck, was basically writing novels,
mm-hmm.
episode by episode, based on the adventures of the Winchesters. And it's these novels that became ultra popular with, you know, on the internet, which created fan fiction and conventions and everything else, which of course we've seen over the years.
Yes.
And of course is the basis then for Supernatural the musical. At the end of the 5th season, there were hints that Chuck potentially could be the ever-absent God character.
Mm-hmm.
Considering that he is, quote-unquote, the writer.
Yes.
And last season, there was this return to the notion that someone playing God, a.k.a. Metatron, was not simply recounting events, but rather influencing events in the writing of the tale. And so there, that alone was kind of making me wonder if they were returning to this idea of Chuck being quote-unquote God. For him to show up as this mysterious producer of this musical at this particular time where the brothers needed to be reminded of, at the end of the day, what was the most important thing in this core relationship that, for all that they basically are on the verge of breaking, this is the thing that could really turn them around. This is their, like, moment of epiphany.
Yes.
Had to come at the hands of Chuck and his kind of unknowing minions is a perfect metaphor, especially if you consider this whole idea that Chuck's books are supposed to become known in the future as the Winchester Gospels.
Right.
So it's not beating you over the head, but if anyone wanted to have that theory kind of reinforced in this late moment of the game, boy, does this do a good job of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was another situation of where they made enough reference to it within the episode that, I mean, in my case, Chuck is somebody who I was already familiar with, even though I haven't seen the episodes. But I think they did do a good job of setting that up, even for people who didn't have all of the background.
Well, that's good. That's good. But yeah, because my thought is that they may never name check him again until the very end.
Yeah.
It's possible that they don't need to. One of the criticisms, I guess, from some, you know, obviously in Christian circles, for instance, is that why would they portray God as basically letting all of these incredibly terrible things happen, and letting heaven go amok? The angels are, you know, portrayed as being completely off kilter and everything else. And, you know, what I've always kind of had in the back of my mind, even going back to the fourth and fifth season, is that, you know, what if God was basically taking a step backward because he wanted his, you know, children, or however you want to put it, to solve the problem themselves?
Right.
He knows it's going to work out okay. He doesn't need to step in. You know, and the whole thing was, is that there, if there is a future in which these books are known as something, that implies that it was this very important biblical level turn of, you know, complete turn of events that completely reordered things, you know, because there's the Old Testament, the New Testament, and then the Winchester Gospels of all things, you know. So it's this, you know, it is a bit of a and some people were like, oh no, Chuck is just supposed to be this very tongue-in-cheek avatar for Kripke, and he's kind of acknowledging the ridiculousness of him writing this story about, you know, there being this hand behind all these events that create something on this, you know, storied level of gospels and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, it still works as that, but I feel like within the narrative of the show, it makes perfect sense for them to go there. So I liked the fact that they did that, and I was I'm glad that that kind of came across, even with what little there was in there. But this is another one of those episodes. It's like you're either going to love it or hate it.
Yes, exactly.
I loved it. To me, this is on par with or very similar to the 200th episode of Stargate SG-1, which again was a total love it hate it episode. You either thought it was hilarious, and you know, poked fun of itself and the fans in the best way possible, or you thought it was trash.
Right.
But come on, who didn't love a single man tier?
Yes.
Or I got chills when they started singing Carry On My Wayward Son.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It, no, as I think I mentioned when I was talking about Person of Interest, you know, there are certain shows that I do follow the Twitter feeds for always after I've seen the episode. I'm not one of these people who can go back and forth while it's on. But last Tuesday night between Supernatural's 200th and Person of Interest's Twitter feed, it was as those of you who saw my retweets know, I was up quite late actually, trolling through through all of the comments on both of those episodes, and one thing that that cracked me up was Misha Collins was going back and forth with Jensen Ackles talking about how they should start doing that that pared down version of Wayward Son at convention panels, and I saw that and I thought, you know, yeah, if they want to start a tradition of ending Supernatural panels with a sing along of Wayward Son, I'd be completely on board with that.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet.
Exactly.
It's like the So Say We All of Supernatural. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely, to me, it hit the right note. I'm hoping that this is a kind of return to form, but...
Yeah, but it's completely impossible to say because this was such obvious one off, quite an exceptional accomplishment to come up with something that's both that wacky and then to pull it off so well was just really well done, and I realize now as we've been talking about it and just the very fact that it hasn't been mentioned, I guess for me the 0.5 was that Calliope as a villain just wasn't that compelling, and in the end it was just the takedown of her was kind of perfunctory, but she this really was a case of where she was just there to set everything else in motion, and the enjoyment in the episode was in the production and the Winchester's reactions to it.
Yes, indeed. Now I just got to figure out what kind of title do we have for this episode. Anyway, as I ponder that.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay you weary. Don't you cry no more. Once I rose above the noise and confusion, just to get a glimpse beyond this illusion, I was sorry.
Who's that?
Oh, that's Adam, John Winchester's other kid. He's still trapped in the cage. In hell. With Lucifer.
Masquerading as a man with a reason. My charade is the event of the season. And if I claim to be a wise man, it surely means I don't know. Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you
let's see. I suppose we should get on to our quick hits, perhaps?
I believe so. I think that'll work.
Yep, I think that makes a lot of sense. So let's see. Let me just go down, scroll down and see where we are. And I will take the first one, obviously. The Vampire Diaries, Season 6, Episode 6. The more you ignore me, the closer I get. And anyone who thought I was going to sing that, no, sorry. Alaric realizes Joe can't be compelled, so he asks Elena to dig into her background. Meanwhile, Caroline learns Enzo has been captured by Trip and tries to rescue him. Jeremy hits rock bottom and lashes out in a destructive way, and Damon takes matters into his own hands when he receives some upsetting news. Not a bad episode, but it's pretty much stock and trade for this series at this point, which has gotten a little bit long in the tooth. But it is nice to have Damon back in a more normal way. So,
oh, good.
I will give this one still a 7.5. Well, it's kind of where the show is landed right now. It's not nearly at its old heights, but it is still there and still above average, at least. Why don't you take the next one, Edmund?
Certainly. This is the latest episode of Homeland, Season 4, Episode 7, Redux. Lockhart arrives in Islamabad to help negotiate Saul's release. Meanwhile, Carrie's investigation gets complicated as she deals with Saul's situation, the search for a hospital employee with the key to Haqqani's true medical condition, and a serious threat to her own sharp focus.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly.
Take that last phrase extremely tongue-in-cheek, please.
Oh, boy. What would you give this one?
I will give it a 7.
Interesting, because I would give it an 8.5. Even with the little part at the end, which was very close to the edge of annoying me,
I thought
this was the best depiction of Carrie's mental illness that they've had in a really long time. It harkened back to me to some of the more extreme situations in the first season, where she was off of her meds. This time, however, not because she thought that she was well, but very, very opposite of that.
Yep.
And I just found her descent to be interesting and well done. I also found Saul's kind of journey through the heart of darkness to be compelling in its own way.
Yeah, I guess for me, I mean, it was, I found the Redux title, rather appropriate, but not necessarily in the best ways. I found myself rather annoyed with Lockhart showing up and being the bull in the china shop, and then with that situation where it is pretty much in character with the way he's been developed, but it seemed more the case of plot complication for the sake of plot complication, and then the whole ruse of substituting the meds and to really throw her off kilter. I think part of what's happening here is after now a few seasons of experience with these producers and writers, my 7 was more because I'm just afraid we're entering the period of the season where they just decide to go really over the top because they feel they need to top themselves and I'm afraid of how outrageous things might get. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I'll worry about that when it happens.
Yeah.
Because we're certainly not we don't hold back when it comes to giving the show the what for. Why don't you take the next one as well?
Sure. That would be The Good Wife, Season 6, Episode 8, Red Zone. Alicia takes on a college rape case that pits her against Lewis Canning when it moves from a university hearing to civil court. Meanwhile, Eli and Elfman conduct a political focus group as Alicia dives deeper into her campaign for state's attorney.
Yes, and Henry gave this one a 9.
Ah.
And I would actually... I'm not going to score it officially, but I would say I agree with that. I did see this episode, and it was fairly compelling, to say the least. Let's see. The next one would be Resurrection, Season 2, Episode 7, Miracles. Rachel refuses treatment for the virus, fearing for the safety of her unborn child. At the same time, Elaine's brother Ray comes down with the disease. Meanwhile, Deputy Carl throws his support behind the growing anti-returned movement, True Living. And Brian Addison takes more than a passing interest in Margaret. Yeah, so once again, I'm going to give this one an 8. It's maintaining its dark focus, I'll just put it that way. This idea of a movement of people who are willing to take extreme measures against the returned is a nice callback to what the mother, Margaret Langston, was more than happy to champion when she was among the living as a child. So,
okay. Interesting.
Yes, it's actually doing some of the things that I think The Leftovers could have benefited from. but we'll see.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I just wanted to mention it's funny you say that, because for some reason, just when there was the mention of the growing anti-returned group True Living, I automatically started thinking of The Leftovers.
This episode made me think that if at some point they manage in some bizarre way to say that Resurrection was like a sequel to The Leftovers, it would make a lot of sense. Thematically, anyway. Anyway, moving on then to The Originals, Season 2, Episode 6, Wheel Inside the Wheel. Klaus demands that Esther release Elijah, but she reveals a few dark secrets from Klaus' past in an effort to make him an offer he can't refuse. Meanwhile, Haley reconnects with Jackson, Cammie becomes suspicious of her faculty advisor, and a visitor from Klaus's past arrives. Another good, solid episode of this show. I continue to believe that The Originals is doing more of what The Vampire Diaries used to be best known for. And so I will give this one an 8. Why don't you take the next one there, Edmund?
Certainly. This would be Gotham, which, yes, has fallen into quick hits, folks. Two episodes here. First one, Season 1, Episode 7, Penguin's Umbrella. Gordon comes face to face with the consequences of his decision to spare Penguin's life. Meanwhile, tensions between Maroni and Falcone grow more violent.
And let's see, as I look up Mr. Henry's review, yes, what would you give this one?
I think I would give this one a 7.
A 7, okay. And Henry gave this one an 8, and I will split the difference at a 7.5. So let's see, what about the next one?
Next one is Season 1, Episode 8, The Mask. Gordon and Bullock check out a brutal fight club that features bouts between candidates applying for work at a financial firm. Meanwhile, upon his return to school, Bruce makes a new friend. What?
Okay, what would you give this one?
I will give this a 6.
That is what Henry gave this one, and I would give it a 6.5.
Yeah.
Because I kind of liked Bruce and his violent streak, and Alfred kind of sitting back and going, yep.
Yes. Yeah, and
more coming where that came from. If you don't wise up,
yes, I guess that does say something. Yes, this was the first time that the Bruce Wayne subplot was far more compelling than the main action, which basically just proved that the first corollary of Fight Club is don't try to imitate Fight Club.
Yeah, and certainly don't do it in a way that highlights the fact that this big rift between Gordon and the GCPD gets resolved in a single episode.
Yes.
Yes. Anything more that we want to say about Gotham, or are we just going to let that stand and we'll kind of revisit it with the whole group later down the road?
I think that's a good idea.
Okay, and so we are going to wrap up the quick hits with Star Wars Rebels. Season 1, Episode 7, Out of Darkness. Hera and Sabine take the Phantom to an abandoned asteroid base to get supplies, but they become stranded there and are attacked by ravenous creatures. Once again, kind of a stock and trade episode, not overly light like the not-so-successful episodes, but certainly not anything to write home about, so I'm going to stick with a 7, which is about where the series as a whole is sitting right now. It's just a fairly average animated series for Star Wars, so not really doing anything horrible, but also at the same time not really making strides, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, certainly. Even though I did not watch them, but with everything I heard about Clone Wars, it is sad to hear that apparently the follow on is more average than good or better than good.
Well, I would say though it should be kept in mind that the first season of Clone Wars was uneven as well, so it took a while for it to gain its reputation as a superior animated series worthy of the name. And certainly everyone remembers the film that kicked it all off, that was one of the...
Well, yes.
most inexplicable mediocre pieces.
You mean that two-hour trailer for a video game? Oh, I'm sorry, did I say that out loud?
Yeah, well, that's pretty close. Yeah, anyway, I think it's just it needs room to grow. Right now it may be in a holding pattern because, of course, it is the one piece of on-screen new canon that's out there right now. And so it may be that they're trying to establish a rhythm for the show, but they can't really do too much because, well, what can they really establish yet?
Right.
I wonder if they're in that kind of weird place that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was at the beginning of its first season.
But yeah. I was just thinking that as well. Not that they're directly linked, of course, the way S.H.I.E.L.D. was with Winter Soldier. But whether they need to wait until Episode 7 comes out to flesh out some of the things that they can do.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time. Watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.